Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. We're fortunate because joining us this week is columnist and Albany bureau chief for the New York Daily News, one of our favorites. He's regarded as the best columnist in Albany, Ken Lovett. Welcome back, Ken.
Good to be here.
Let's talk about the de Blasio Cuomo wars. Let's start on the charter schools. Would you like to nominate a winner and a loser on this one?
I think so far we've seen the governor wiping the floor with the mayor. These two came in. All we heard was, oh, they're great friends. 20 years. They're going to work like no other governor and mayor has worked before.
Let the record show I didn't believe it from the first minute.
Let the record show you were right. Because certainly, right out of the gate, they were at war over the issue of pre-K. The mayor came out in an election year for the governor and the legislature with a plan asking Albany for permission to raise the city income tax on the wealthy to pay for pre-K programs. Governor said, we're not going to do that. Instead, he proposed a five-year, $1.5 billion state-funded plan for a statewide pre-K. And the Senate Republican said, yeah, we like that one. And he and the mayor have been at war ever since. On top of that, the mayor, in his State of the City address, threw out an issue of minimum wage, saying we want the city to have the power to set our own minimum wage. Not just a few hours later, the governor shot that down. And then on top of that, as you said, he came up, the mayor was going to be holding a rally that attracted about 1,000 union people for his pre-K plan. The governor countered by helping organize a rally of 7,000 charter school parents and kids down the street at the same exact time, gave a fiery speech supporting charter schools, something the mayor is opposed.
We're with you.
We will save charter schools. So, I mean, it has been really ugly. And the governor along the way has taken little pokes and shots at the arguments the mayor has made. He's tried to, and effectively done so, turn his arguments around on him. The argument that, you know, the mayor was trying to fix inequality, the governor tried to steal that back and say, well, we're not going to have inequality when it comes to pre-K for upstate and suburban school districts so New York City can have a top-flight pre-K program.
How much do you think these guys, I mean, one of his top aides is Andrew Zambelli, Drew Zambelli, worked also as a top aide to his father and is a great pollster. How much do you think politics in New York State, according to Cuomo, is putting his finger in the wind and seeing which way it's blowing?
Well, I think there's a lot to that. I mean, look, the truth is this fight with the mayor is actually helping the governor because it is making him look like a quote-unquote reasonable moderate Democrat upstate and in the suburbs. The mayor represents a true threat to the governor on the liberal side of the party, the progressive wing of the party.
Or the redistributive side, right, as I often say. Meaning he wants to take from the rich and give to the poor.
And they finally have someone championing their causes in the mayor. And the governor is then taking it to him, hoping that, you know, if you take away the progressives, which obviously a Democrat needs, but if you take away the progressives, he's trying to win over the moderate Republicans, even the regular Republicans.
What I call the purples.
Yeah, and the upstate and suburbs. He wants to rack up a big victory, and this is all part of it. He's arguing, I'm fighting taxes. I'm trying to get pre-K for the whole state. I'm fighting, you know, this minimum wage proposal.
And on charter schools.
And on charter schools, which are popular in a lot of areas. Interestingly enough, charter schools are also popular in a lot of the areas that support de Blasio. I mean, a lot of minority communities love the idea of charter schools
because it gives them choice.
Yeah.
I've been impressed by that argument that, you know, on the one hand, there's a sense that an upper middle class person on the west side of Manhattan can send their kid to a very expensive private school, but that people with no means can't. That's a powerful argument for the charter schools.
Absolutely. And just the way the governor has done it, even to get personal in the sense that, you know, this whole inequality argument. So then the governor goes on radio one day and he says, Yeah, I've heard the inequality. I've heard the tale of two states, two cities, because my father did it in 1984.
He did.
And he kind of reclaimed the issue. He frequently says that, you know, the Assembly's been fighting for pre-K since the mid-90s, and it's something I've mentioned for years now. So he keeps trying to needle the mayor by saying, hey, you aren't reinventing the wheel here. These ideas have been around a long time.
So we have this new redistributive figure, some people call progressive, in New York City, de Blasio. We have the governor who is waxing poetic up here in Albany. The governor's numbers, his personal attractiveness has fallen. What's that about?
Well, and it's his popularity is still pretty high. It's still around 60% or more.
Right.
But his job approvals have fallen.
Yes.
And the reality is, I mean, I think in the last couple of months, especially, you know, he's been hurt upstate. You know, he made some comments about the conservatives that may or may not have heard him, you know, saying that if you're an extreme conservative who is anti-abortion, pro-assault weapon, and anti-gay, there's no place for you in New York. And the Republicans picked that up and tried to make hay of it. He also...
Guns.
There's still a lot of feelings about his gun law. And he angered a lot of people recently when he went before the Legislative Black, Hispanic, and Puerto Rican Caucus, and he called for basically the state funding college education for prisoners.
Now, I thought that was a courageous move. However, he did catch an awful lot of hell for it. You think he didn't know what he was doing?
I think he was surprised by the blowback on that. Yeah, I do.
He wanted to give something to the black and Hispanic caucus.
Yeah, he has a very uneasy relationship with the minority community. He goes to their conference and he says, "I'm going to give them this." And especially, he's been under attack for not fighting for the DREAM Act, which would allow the state to fund college assistance programs for the kids of undocumented immigrants. So he hasn't really fought for that. He says he'd sign it if it passed, but he's given no political capital. So he went there. And he gave them the prisoner stuff, and it blew up. It gave the Republicans an issue, and it's not an issue that necessarily polls well among a lot of Democrats either, supposedly.
No, I asked my class whether they were for it at SUNY at Albany, and they were not.
It's a tailor-made issue. Yeah. I mean, when you think about it, if I'm a Republican, what am I going to say? Well, you know, you're trying to scrimp and save, and, you know, college is $40,000, you know, and the governor is giving a free education to inmates. I mean, you can certainly argue the merits that it's a worthwhile cause. But it's kind of like the driver's license issue that Elliot Spitzer did when he wanted to give illegal immigrants driver's licenses. You know, it may make an intellectual argument, but it doesn't sell to the heart.
So does de Blasio not know what he's doing when he comes up with some of these things?
I think de Blasio is learning on the job. You know, someone said to me in one of the columns I recently wrote, a lot of his Democratic allies were really critical of how he's handling things. And they said, you know, especially up in Albany, you have us fighting for pre-K and you want that. And that's such a heavy lift as it is. And then you throw in all these other things, whether it's charter schools, whether it's the minimum wage, you're doing too much. And someone said to me that he hasn't really made the transition from being a public advocate to a mayor.
Which is a nothing position to being a very powerful
person. Right. And so he's still holding the rallies and he's still doing all these things, but he's not doing what's needed to get stuff passed up here. And he also has to realize just because he's a Democrat in a Democrat heavy legislature doesn't mean he's going to get what he wants, because the senators and the assembly people who are Democrats still have to deal on a day-to-day basis with the governor. So if the governor is opposing something, it's not just that simple for a lawmaker to say, well, we'll buck the governor and we'll do a pre-K tax. So I think he hasn't realized that yet. He's learning what Bloomberg learned and what Giuliani learned, that Albany, it takes political skill, and we have not yet seen him master that skill.
And yet, he's not personally unpopular yet. You see all kinds of very nice articles in the tabs and others showing him taking selfies of himself, surrounded by reporters with a big smile on his face. He hasn't really hit the skids.
Well, I mean, a recent poll showed that his popularity, people still like him personally.
It's just like Andrew.
But his job approval.
Yeah.
I mean, he's, what, 7 weeks in? And I think his job approval was 39%. I mean, that was a shocking figure. I mean, you know, this stuff is taking its toll, these battles with the governor. I think he kind of thought might makes right if I, you know, if I just go out and fight for what I believe in, it'll, you know, help my popularity. But the reality is, and this was another shot the governor's people took at him, and I was actually really surprised, but there is a point to be made there. Steve Cohn, the governor's former chief of staff, who's now in private practice, but still close and still an advisor, he wrote an op-ed piece that basically questioned the mandate that de Blasio won on. He said, you can't argue he had 73% of the vote. It is a mandate, but he questioned how strong it is because he noted that of the 4 million plus registered voters, only less than 800,000 pulled the lever for de Blasio. So, you know, 25% of the electorate turned out to vote in the race. And of that, only, you know, de Blasio got most of it, but still, it turns out only 20% of the electorate voted for him.
Now, Cohen, this fellow Steve Cohen, has been noted for certain sayings. One is that we operate on two speeds. You remember what that one was?
Yes, it was. We operate on two speeds here, get along and kill. And you know what? They operate really on 1.5 speeds. Sometimes they get along. Most of the time they kill.
Yeah. And so it's hard to believe that Cohen would do an op-ed piece without having one of those intense conversations which people have every once in a while with the governor on the phone.
Especially a piece like that. I mean, Cohen denies it. The governor's people deny it. But it is hard to believe that he would put so early an op-ed piece that was such a direct hit at the mayor, while the governor was in a fight with the mayor.
And to all of this comes the mayor's wife. You want to talk about that a bit?
Yeah, the mayor's wife. And honestly, David Patterson was critical of this comment, too. The mayor's wife made a comment that the argument over pre-K is the civil rights issue of our time. And, you know, that raised a lot of eyebrows for hyperbole.
But not entirely wrong.
But David Patterson even said, you know, to compare that to when people had separate bathrooms and couldn't go into restaurants and had to drink from separate fountains, you know, water fountains, it's a little over the top. So the governor of late has been using the line, you know, oh, people talk about, he wouldn't say her name, but, you know, people talk about the civil rights issue of our time. Well, really, that's failing schools. And then he also mentions charter schools as being more important than pre-K in the discussion on how to fix education. But that really was seen as a repudiation to what the mayor's wife said, which, again, was interesting. He spent weeks knocking the mayor, and then he takes a shot. A little subtle shot, but nonetheless a shot at the mayor's wife, his good friend's wife.
His, quote, good friend's wife. Somebody wrote with some wag in one of the tabs, I thought, he doesn't have any friends. You know, he has people he deals with, but good friends is not something you would say about Andrew Cuomo.
Someone mentioned it to me this way. It's easier to be his friend when you don't have to work with him or against him.
Sure.
So, the mayor's finding that out, I guess.
So I guess here's campaign financing. He says he's for it. Frankly, I'm from Missouri. I want to be shown. He's got $32-33 million in his campaign account. He says he's for it. The Senate Republicans say nothing doing, although this week there was a development in there, too.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, I had a column this week, not to plug too hard. But,
no, I saw it.
But I had
good.
A column that basically the national Excellent. Progressives are saying the same thing you're saying, which is we don't believe it. Yes, he's put it out there, and yes, he says he's for it. But, you know, he has 33 million reasons, they say, not to fight for it. And they want to see whether he's going to fight for this in the budget or not. The Senate Republicans are now talking about possibly bringing it to the floor, allowing a vote on it, just because they know it would probably fail. And then they can dispatch it.
I want to talk to you about that because, as you know, we have talked about this obscure thing, which I think most people don't understand, about the four Democrats who have joined with the Republicans to make this independent caucus. And those guys say they are for it, too, this campaign finance. Yeah. It would seem to me if you get a bunch of Democrats who would be for it and those four guys standing up, if there's an open vote, it might have a shot.
No, because there aren't enough Democrats in that chamber to pass it.
Because right now there are a few vacancies. Is that what you're saying?
Well, right. And here's how it basically breaks down. And if, I love explaining this just because it's so New York, I guess, when you think of especially the Senate. But you've got really four groups of Democrats in the Senate. This is probably the only time in history where a party has the majority of the members in a chamber but doesn't have control of the chamber. You've got 24 or 25 traditional Democrats.
Right.
You need 32, don't forget to pass anything. You've got 24 or 25 traditional Democrats. You've got five members of the Independent Democratic Conference, which is working with the Republicans to control the chamber.
Some people call them collaborationists.
Yes. You have two Democrats, who I like to refer to as the indicted Independent Democratic Conference, because they've been indicted and nobody wants to have anything to do with them. So they're on their own. They're not with the Republicans or the Democrats. And then you have another.
Could you name those two for everybody?
Yeah, John Sampson and Malcolm Smith, both who once led the chamber. And then as leaders, and then you have one Democrat from Brooklyn, Simcha Felder, who actually, one is a Democrat, says he's a Democrat, but sits with the Republican conference. So you've got really four different factions of Democrats in the chamber.
Circular firing squad.
Circular firing squad. And then you have 29 Republicans.
Yeah.
So the votes aren't there for campaign finance, in all likelihood, for public financing. It probably would not get a single Republican vote. I think there's one or two Democrats who are opposed to it, and that would kill it right there.
Okay, so let's go on to the DREAM Act.
Okay.
What's going on with that? You know, the idea that somehow New York should do what the feds have not been able to do, which is to find some way of relieving some of the tension on those people who are not legal.
Well, it's funny. This issue, which you think the Democrats would be fighting hard for, certain Democrats are afraid to bring it up in the chamber because they're worried it will hurt their marginals this election year. It's not an issue that necessarily polls well in certain districts. The Republicans, however, are talking about bringing it to the floor with the idea of having it fail, because the independent Democrats are under such pressure now from the left, saying, you're not real Democrats. You promised to bring progressive pieces of legislation to the floor. You haven't done it. You know, you broke your promise. So now the Republicans met for 90 minutes last week and said, should we allow this to the floor? It will probably fail. You know, they don't want another gun law where it comes to the floor and passes, because that would anger their base. But if they can guarantee that it fails, there's a shot they might bring it out, just A, to help the independent Democrats who are their partners, and B, to embarrass the Democrats, saying, you don't even have the votes. We let it out.
And what would be in it, Ken Lovett?
It would basically allow the state financial assistance programs to cover the college costs for the kids of illegal immigrants. So basically, your parents were illegal, came here illegally, and then they either brought you with them or they had you while here, you went to a New York high school, you graduated, you got into a college, this would allow the financial aid programs to cover.
Like TAP and things
right.
like that. Interesting. Let's go to something really obscure right now, and that's the election of the Board of Regents in New York State. Let's do that.
Let's see if anyone could name one single regent. You can give a prize away.
You could give a prize away, because you could go out in front of any one of these buildings and ask who the vice president of the United States is, and half the people wouldn't know.
Yeah. The Board of Regents has been under fire for the Common Core curriculum. Usually what happens is certain members of the board come up for, you know, their appointments expire. They want to be reappointed. It's usually a pretty staid process that it's a joint session of the legislature appoints these people.
And it's the only thing that you get a joint session of the legislature for, but there are less Republicans than there are Democrats.
So the reality is, for years, the Assembly Democrats had enough votes, you need 107, had enough votes on their own to appoint these regents, and usually it was whoever Shelley Silver wanted, and these people were reappointed, and that was it. But now what happened was, because of the Common Core controversy, a lot of the lawmakers were angry and hostile, and they wanted to they were threatening to get rid of all four incumbents who were up. In the end, they jettisoned one, a guy with the last name of Jackson from the Albany area. But the other three were, even though we were promised it was going to be an ugly, contentious session, after Jackson stepped down the night before the vote, he took his name out from consideration under pressure. And the other three were easily reappointed, as was a fourth one from Sullivan County.
This is so interesting. The Common Core, which is so contentious, it's not a bad idea. You want to raise the standards for everybody. I don't think there's anybody who disagrees with that. So what they do is, because the schools can't meet those standards, is they say, we don't like the way it was done. That's the way it always goes.
Right. It was the rollout of it. The teachers are upset because they're using the results from these Common Core assessment tests, standardized testing, to help rank and evaluate teachers. The teachers are saying, well, you know, if the rollout was bad and you're saying that the standards aren't being enacted properly at this point, how can we be held accountable for that? But the governor has stuck to his guns on that one, and the regents backed down. They were going to do a two-year delay in using those standardized tests toward the teacher evaluations. But after the governor went ballistic, they backed down on that one. But they did delay the implementation in terms of using it for graduation, using it for grade promotion, all those kinds of things.
So how is it, Ken Levitt, to write for a major metropolitan tabloid newspaper? The Daily News has more readers than anybody else. And knowing full well that not everybody knows a lot about Albany.
You know, that could be frustrating. You know, it's funny. Last year I wrote a lot about, you try to bring it to people. Last year I wrote a lot about the Moreland Commission that the governor, the Anti-Corruption Commission, and I wrote a lot about how the governor got involved and he was trying to steer it, and, you know, people were upset about that.
You did. You got a lot of information.
And then a poll came out and showed like 80% don't know what the Moreland Commission
is. Of course.
So you just go, all right, well, I guess I'm writing for the 20% who do. Now, look, you know, you hope people read. You realize that's, you know, some of this is bad medicine that they have to take, even if they're not paying that close attention. Others, you know, you hit on topics that are that interest people. We try to make it understandable, make it so people can read it, know why it matters to them, and do it in a way where they don't get bored or tune out.
So is there anything coming out that we should know about that you think you're keeping an eye on that might turn into a full-blown brouhaha?
At this point, you know, I think all eyes right now are, you know, A, I wouldn't give that away right now if I was, but I think right now all eyes are on the coming elections and how every decision now is with an eye toward November.
Okay, now, the big issue is there's a guy, Rob Astorino. He's a popular Westchester County executive. He gets what we call a free ride, meaning he gets to run for office without having to give up his existing office. He's a Republican in a Democratic area. He's done very well. The press always takes the trailer and tries to make something a little bit better out of them. But on its face, it looks like, how can he possibly beat Andrew Cuomo?
You know, on its face, I would agree. Right now, you know, Cuomo has 33 million, Astorino has 1 million. Cuomo's numbers, while not in the stratosphere like they were a couple of years ago, are still pretty high, and people still like him statewide, a little less upstate, maybe a lot less upstate. But Astorino is a real deal candidate. I would give him that.
Oh, he's a very strong candidate.
He's someone who's won twice in Democrat-heavy Westchester County. He's someone who has a record he's going to run on. And I think he's someone who's not perceived as being out there like a Carl Paladino was. You know,
yeah.
He's a real deal candidate. You don't know what can happen. Look, I know it was a third term for Mario Cuomo, but, you know, if we were sitting here in March, would anyone have thought George Pataki was going to take out Mario Cuomo? You know, I think it's unlikely Andrew Cuomo goes down, but you don't know what happens in the next few months. You don't know if there's a scandal that suddenly surfaces, but certainly the governor is doing everything he can. He just held a big fundraiser this week with big, rich Republican donors, which, you know, on the week after Astorino announces he does that, he just co-opted one of the a top Republican consultant and hired her for his administration. So he's doing everything he needs to do to kind of neutralize Astorino even more than he is neutralized. But again, you know, time will tell. You don't know what will happen between now and November.
Well, you know, I've always said that if this is the second term, the reelection term for Andrew Cuomo, he can't lose. But if people perceive this as the fifth for Mario Cuomo, he might.
Yeah. Well, look, and you know, one lawmaker said to me there's already a bit of a second term fatigue by the legislature with the governor. You know, I don't know if that fatigue has reached the public. You know, that's usually when it happens. And third terms have notoriously been bad for politicians in New York. But no, I mean, if I had to guess right now, I think Andrew Cuomo wins handily. I think Astorino, there's enough anger at the governor over his gun law and some of the other things he's done, both upstate and in the suburbs, that I think Astorino will do better than, say, like Carl Paladino did a few years ago. You know, Astorino could get 40, 41, 2%, somewhere in that range. But I think the governor still wins it running away. But the governor wants to run it up. He wants as big a win as he can.
To what end? To be the president?
Perhaps. You know, I've always argued, I think the governor has done everything he's done, so it goes like on two tracks. Does it work in New York? Does it work nationally?
Yeah.
So while I don't think he's running in 2016, I still think that narrative still plays.
Just in case.
Just in case.
As things open up. Well, it's always great to have Ken Lovett as our guest. Ken Lovett is the columnist and Albany bureau chief for the New York Daily News, writes the best column around. You want to read it, you read it on Mondays. Ken, thanks so much for joining us, and we're sure you'll come back and talk to us some more.
It's always fun.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.